Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to call to order the Friday, December 16th Transportation and Land Use Committee meeting to order. The first item on our agenda is a permanent pump and haul request, E.A. Burns, Sterling Glass. If we can ask folks from the Health Department come forward. When you're ready, sir.
This item, number one, it has to do with Elizabeth Burns' property, Sterling Glass. She's in the Tall Oak subdivision. It's been slated for sewer for quite some time. Recently, it's just been approved to be on the special tax district. We understand there's no really viable option other than permanent pump and haul, but by regulation, we're recommending denial of the process. However, we did leave open draft motions to consider number two, but we want to be very specific. It has to do with this property and this property only, because there's other ones in Tall Oaks that are trying to build new construction, and we're trying to make sure they don't go for permanent pump and haul as well. This has to do with the sale of the property, and that's why this is being brought forward.
Okay, are there questions for staff? Madam Chair.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, to say this in simpler terms, you recommend no approval because it is the staff's practice to recommend no approval on permanent pump and hauls. Is that correct?
True, and the state regulations require that sewer has to be there within 12 months. And that this pump and haul doesn't last more than 12 months, which we believe this would.
And this has been going on for how long already?
At least 12 years.
At least 12 years.
The reason she had an unapproved sewage disposal system that could not be put in because the state no longer allowed that system. So with that being said, we placed her on temporary pump and haul thinking sewer was going to be a viable option. 2005, it fell through. It's been ongoing problem for Tall Oaks for quite some time. So we think there's light at the end of the tunnel there, but we don't think it's going to be, we think it's going to be longer than a year.
Okay, I understand. Thank you.
Supervisor Olmsted.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm looking at the map with the magenta lots. Are all of these commercial or are some of them residential?
All of these are commercial.
All right. And these are the ones you're concerned might also apply?
Yes. But these are the ones that are on the Tall Oaks Sewer District. Tall Oaks is a much, there's more property in Tall Oaks, but the magenta ones are the ones that are slated for the sewer tax district. The second property up from Woodlawn, mm-hmm. Woodland Road, that's being proposed as a commercial facility now. He does have his plans in to construct. He has approached us for permanent pump and haul. We basically said no because the site plan says connection to sewer. So that's why we left it at that.
And is it that sewer is just completely unavailable or that it's more expensive than these folks feel they can afford?
This has been a bypass community for quite some time, but I'm going to let Gwen talk to that.
So what's happening now is that before you in public hearing in January, there's going to be a sewer tax district that's coming. All of the property owners, all of them in magenta, including the one we're speaking of, has signed on to that tax district. So when that happens, there's basically a plan to pay for it for the next 20 years, paying back Loudoun Water for the investment. So the idea would be is that if you recommended approval of the pump and haul, it would only be in place until sewer came, which would be most likely at several years from now because we have to go through all the design work once it's the tax district is approved and all of that before it can actually be put into place.
Thanks. Thank you very much.
I'm going to ask a question. Following up on that, because my concern is when I see this area and go, you know, it's across the street from Claude Moore Park, you know, and this kind of stuff, this is not a rural area. Exactly how far away is the current sewer line from any of these properties?
The property north of the last Magenta property is being constructed now as a storage unit, but they're getting sewer from St. Marie's, the back property. So
from Marie's Road?
Yes. So okay. They're getting it from that area. So that's why we didn't say less than 300 feet on this one, because it may be less than 300 feet, but it's not going to matter because all of the Magenta ones have to connect, and they've asked to connect. So we don't want to put we didn't want to put a length limit on this one. Say when it's within 300 feet. Well, it may be 259 now. So they need to connect once sewer's been established there.
Do you all foresee anyone backing out of this? Because that's the problems that we've had previously, where you've had one of the property owners not want.
I think one of them had to do with litigation before.
Mm-hmm.
So that person, I think, has sold that property. And that property owner now has agreed to connect.
Okay. Now, motion number two. Are you all comfortable with this, that if we were to do this, that it would not mess up the board enacting the tax district for sewer in January and the process going forward, that you would not have someone, say, turn tail and then say, well, I, you know, want to do the permanent pumping hall that I've just been granted? Because the question becomes, if this property is up for sale, I would like to know before we do something, has the new property owner agreed to be in the tax district and agreed to all of this?
We have met with the realtor and the tax, the new proposed buyer,
mm-hmm.
and they want sewer. They say, you know, they didn't know what a pumping hall was. So they...
Okay, that's great that you've met with them. I'm saying, do we have something in writing? Because I learned a long time ago, it doesn't matter what somebody says to you, it's what is in writing.
I haven't seen the contract.
Can I jump in for a second?
Please.
So just so you know, the scheduling of how this would work is that this wouldn't be coming before the board for approval until June 19th. And so the possibility is that it'll be coming for public hearing on June for the approval of to get all those properties in it in January 11th is when it comes to. Sorry. January. January 11th is coming before the board for public hearing. So if you guys act on it that night and suspend the rules and approve it, then it'll be in place before the board makes a decision to add a pump and haul. So that part, it doesn't matter if they sign on or not, because they're already part of the sewer tax district at that point.
Okay.
Because we've had this conversation with Leo. Yeah.
It'll be with the property.
I know, but I'm doing the follow-up question. Normally, when we approve these, it's just TLUC that's approving that it doesn't. Some of these things don't go to the full board.
No, this has to go to the full board.
This goes to the full board.
Correct, and it'll go January 19th.
So we can ensure
correct
that this is done
before.
Okay,
it goes to the board.
All right, excellent.
Yes. The tax district would be done before it goes to the board.
Supervisor Higgins.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. I just want to say, I mean, they're currently using a pump and haul system there right now.
Ms. Burns is
the new. The new owners, are they going to continue the same business, or are they going to do something different?
They're doing a very similar business, and that's why we said throughout this, or successors. So in the agreement that the successors would be the proposed purchasers, and what they've discussed, it's very similar in nature.
And there's light at the end of the tunnel that there's going to be water and sewer in a couple.
Well, at least sewer.
Sewer, right.
But I've said that since 2005, but I think this time it's going to happen.
I mean, basically what we're talking, nothing is changing here except there's sewer on the horizon.
Yes.
Well, the only thing that's changed is it's not Miss Burns any longer. Right. She's retiring. She's selling it. So it's going to be a successor. So
understand. right.
You need a motion?
I would love a motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move the Transportation and Land Use Committee recommend to the Board of Supervisors that the county enter into a contractual agreement with E.A. Burns Sterling Glass or successors and the Virginia Department of Health to allow permanent pump and haul services to serve the existing commercial establishment located at 21563 Cascades Parkway upon the condition that the permanent pump and haul permit will be active only until sewer connection to the Tall Oaks properties has been established or for a five-year duration from the date the Board of Supervisors approval, whichever occurs first. Second, all costs associated with the pump and haul operation and ultimately the approved connection to the public sewer shall be borne by E.A. Burns Sterling Glass or successors. Three, E.A. Burns Sterling Glass or successors shall also be responsible for ensuring that the pump and haul provider submits all required reports, records, receipts through the health department's online tracking system, and four, that the pump and haul approval shall only be for the existing commercial use or similar commercial use and must be abandoned when public central sewer is available to the properties pursuant to the Tall Oaks Water and Sewer Project, at which time all pump and haul tanks and appurtenances, whatever, must be properly abandoned by the owner at the time by permit.
Period. Second.
Thank you, Supervisor Higgins. That was moved and properly seconded. Seconder is Supervisor Umstead. Any discussion on the motion? Opening, sir?
I will spare you.
All right. Well, seeing no discussion, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries 4-0-1 with Supervisor Meyer absent for the vote. Thank you. The next item on our agenda is the Water Resources Technical Advisory Committee Comprehensive Watershed Management Program, Watershed Management Planning Area Recommendation. Good morning, gentlemen. How are you? You can start your presentation when you're ready.
Okay. As soon as I find it. All right, thank you. for those of you who do not know me, my name is Dennis Cumby. I'm with the Water Resources team in the Department of Building and Development. I've been the acting liaison for the Water Resources Technical Advisory Committee as they go through the Comprehensive Watershed Management Program process that they've been involved with for a while. Also with me today is Kevin Murray, who is the chair of the Water Resources Technical Advisory Committee. And if you have any questions specifically for the committee, he's here to try to answer those. The purpose today is to provide the Transportation and Land Use Committee with recommendations from the WRTAC regarding the initiation of a watershed management planning project. This is a continuation of the work that WRTAC has been doing for the Comprehensive Watershed Management Program. This began in 2013. There was a board-approved work plan that we've gone through back in July 21st at the Board of Supervisors business meeting. The WRTAC provided a completion report for that work plan. And at the same time, we also requested guidance from the board on the continuation of the CWMP. The board voted unanimously to direct the WRTAC with staff assistance to identify the optimal county watershed for continued watershed management planning and to provide an estimated cost for those. So what we did, the WRTAC is wanting to continue this process by recommending development of watershed management plans similar in scope to the Upper Broad Run watershed management plan, which was presented to the Transportation Land Use Committee back in 2015. Based on that idea of the pilot project was to supply a template so that we could do further watershed management planning. The WRTAC has gone through many facets of data that we have here in the county and have decided on for a selection process, they defined certain criteria that they wanted to meet to establish which would be the next watershed management area That criteria is listed on page 2. That would be packet page 21. That criteria is land use, land cover, impervious surfaces, current projected population, planned policy areas, the size of the watershed, existing stream impairments, how much of it is within the municipal's separate storm sewer system or the MS4 permit, and existing source water is something that they felt was very important. Based on those criteria, they've decided that the best watershed management area for their continuation is one that's called the Western Hills. And I'm going to go to the next slide to kind of show you where these watershed management areas are. First off, staff had to delineate. There basically is 15 to 17, depending on which data set you use, major watersheds within Loudoun County. What we wanted to do is to get that down to roughly 11, because some of those watersheds are rather small. What we had to do is we had to make a few judgment calls. We put together some of the small areas in with some of the large ones. And one of the things that we had to do that really, it sort of violates the definition of a watershed, but we didn't want to split the towns into two separate watersheds, because the town of Percival and the town of Hamilton, they both sit right on a watershed divide between Catoctin and Goose Creek. So we combined South Fork of Catoctin with portions of the North Fork of Goose Creek and created a watershed management area that we call Western Hills. That way the towns stay intact. And as it turns out, that is the watershed that the WRTEC has chosen to be the one that's the most optimal for continuation of this process. Let me go and take a look at that watershed in a little bit more detail. Actually, it's not a watershed. It's a watershed management area. This is the Western Hills Watershed Management Area. We have shown on this map forest cover and impervious surfaces. The forest cover is in green, impervious surfaces in gray. That's just to show you that we have a variety of land uses within this area. The towns are depicted, so you'll see that three of the western towns are located within this watershed management area. It's very large. It's almost three times the size of the Upper Broad Run. It has a projected population change between now and 2040, or between 2010 and 2040, of just over 52%. It has a very, very small section of MS4 area, and as you can see, the impervious surface area is less than 6%. So it's still largely undeveloped. The WRTEC also decided it would be important to give the board an option, so they chose a backup watershed management area in case you wanted to decide to go with a different route. The one they chose as the backup is the Middle Goose watershed management area. Here's the map showing the Middle Goose area. Again, this one is almost twice the size of the Upper Broad Run area. Its projected population change, and I think this is one of the drivers that made this their backup, its projected population change is of 167% between 2010 and 2040. It has a larger amount of impervious surface, and it also has a larger amount that is within the existing MS4 permit area. Now, along with the selection of these watersheds, the WRTEC was also directed to bring back a cost estimate for development of the plans. Again, we used the Upper Broad Run project as a template. We established a set of tasks and subtasks based on that watershed management plan and the costs associated with it. That's depicted on table 1. That's on page 4 of the staff report. That's packet page 23. What's shown in this, any dollar amount that you see on here is amount that would be requested by the WRTEC for the plan. And the reason that those dollar amounts are there is those are tasks that cannot be performed or that we do not feel can be performed by staff with resisting resources that would be contracted out. And for the most part, it is field assessment and watershed condition assessment. And I have that listed for both the Western Hills and the Middle Goose sections. You'll also notice I wanted to point out task 2C, which is a groundwater assessment. That's a task that was not included in the Upper Broad Run section or the Upper Broad Run study. The reason that the WRTAC felt strongly about adding this groundwater assessment component is that roughly almost 90% of the population in the Western Hills management area depends on groundwater as their source, and about 20% of the Middle Goose watershed management area. That compares to less than 3% of the Upper Broad Run area. So that wasn't as important for Upper Broad Run, and they felt it's more important for these two management areas. The fiscal impact, you'll see that's the requested total that you'll, on table one. If recommended by TLUC, the fiscal impact of the watershed management development would be $190,000 for the Western Hills, or $150,000 for the Middle Goose. The difference in the cost is because of the size difference. It would take a little bit more money to do the field assessment in the larger management area. The WRTAC is also presenting the option of not including the enhanced groundwater sampling, since it was something that was added from the Upper Broad Run. So if you decide to go without that, then the fiscal impact would be $150,000 for the Western Hills and $110,000 for the Middle Goose management area. Staff agrees with the recommendations from the WRTAC, and I have nothing more to add. If you have any questions, we'll be free to ask them.
Thank you. Yes, first we'll open it for questions. Supervisor Higgins, and then Chair Randall, and then Supervisor Olmstead.
Yeah, my question, in looking at those maps, and forgive my ignorance, but there seems like there's an awful lot of gray, impervious. I mean, that can't be all driveways and streets and rooftops. It's got to be something else.
Our impervious surface data includes road casings, rooftops, parking lots. It also includes open water, so it's going to include any streams, lakes, ponds.
Yeah, but I mean, some of that area that if you look up towards the, I guess what would be the northwest of that, it's very solid gray. I mean, I'm trying to figure out how you have that much impervious surface. It's almost, well, there's a lot. I can see in the town, but I have trouble in some of those other areas that are pretty open, just understanding what the count is. Now, you don't mark the white stuff. What is that?
That's just areas that are not forested or impervious.
So that'd be grass or fields, whatever.
Grass, fields.
Okay. Well, that was all.
Madam Chair.
Did you say there were supposed to be 11 planning areas? Because I'm counting 10.
There are 10, and we had initially included 11, but that was the when we put together the Western Hills, that is right, what eliminated right. The 10.
So I've given this story before. I'm going to give it again. When I was in college, I took a class called organic chemistry twice. I took that class twice. I took it twice because the first time I took it, I remember being sitting in class, sitting through a lecture, and at the end of the lecture, the professor said, "Do you have any questions?" I remember feeling so confused I could not form a legitimate question unless saying, "Can you start all over?" That's how I felt when I read this. And I read my packages. I read it, and I read it twice, and I went and found some alternate research to read. And the more I read it, I was just like, I have no idea what I'm reading. Madam Chair, will this come to the board for a full vote?
Yeah.
I'm actually going to abstain on this vote, because I don't know enough to feel like I can vote one way or the other with any amount of knowledge. And I'm going to ask that I receive a briefing, including the vocabulary words that go along with this, before I actually vote. And that doesn't mean that you all didn't do a marvelous job in what you wrote, but it felt like I was reading a lot of words and I understood each separate word. But when I put them together in a sentence, didn't know what it meant anymore. So I am not versed in this language. I am not versed in this topic. And I could sit here and kind of fake it and just make it through it. But I prefer not to do that. I would prefer to understand what I'm voting on. And so if you don't mind spending some time talking to me one-on-one and helping me understand the different watershed areas and what we're talking about, I really appreciate that. I really do want to understand it. And reading it myself and doing my own research did not get me, I am not comfortable enough to feel like I'm ready to vote. So I'm going to abstain until I learn more. Thank you. Okay. By the way, I took organic chemistry a second time and got a B. Just want to say that.
Supervisor Umstead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Once these studies are complete, how do they enable us to make life better for the residents or businesses in the areas we've studied? Do they guide us in not approving development in certain areas? Do they tie in with TMDL requirements? Mm-hmm. How do we use this information to improve things?
The biggest advantage of having watershed management planning is that you have identified the problem areas, you've identified the good areas, you've identified what you need to preserve and what you would like to improve. Out of the Upper Broad Run project, we actually came up with a list of some 75 projects that would be available. Since that time, the Department of General Services has used, I believe, two of those projects for retrofits that they are using to meet the MS4 reduction requirements. We have supplied these projects to other groups, such as school groups. I believe the PEC has picked up on several of these projects, and they have done some tree plantings and other projects based on what we have found as areas in need of such projects, and that would be most beneficial to have those kind of projects performed. So that's the advantage, is the having done the legwork for a lot of community associations that want to have things done.
And how, when it comes to assessing groundwater, how do we tie those findings into any decisions we might make on approving new structures on well and septic?
The results from those, from that effort, from the groundwater monitoring effort, would not be regulatory in nature. It would be more like finding areas that we have just maybe identify where there may be a hot spot or a problem area associated with a particular contaminant, just something that we will have in our knowledge base. And if based on that something needs to be done, then we would know what it is. But we definitely don't have the type of regulatory requirement in the watershed management plans.
And one last question. Are we under any kind of federal or state mandates to perform these studies and come up with these plans and programs?
No, ma'am. We are under no requirement to do these plans and programs. The federal and state requirements that we do have in place are the local TMDLs and the Chesapeake Bay TMDL, which would be countywide. Local TMDLs are things that have to be addressed from a state regulatory standpoint. And the information that we gather from a watershed management plan is some good background information to have to effectively implement a plan for meeting a TMDL requirement.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay. Just as a follow-up on one of the questions, I even participated with the PEC in one of the tree plantings. We ended up planting like 130 trees. So, I mean, ultimately, and this project actually originally started with the board prior to 2012.
Yes.
WARTEC was working on it. And I personally like the fact that the committee has picked a Western Loudoun one. because we did the Upper Broad Run, which was in the east, more in the suburban area, and I think it's good to do one in the western part of the area because there are different dynamics, and that would be helpful because anytime we can do this, we're actually, I feel, and correct me if I'm wrong, that this is helping us prepare for when more, say, mandates come down from, say, the EPA and the federal government for our TMDLs, that all of these things that we do and the improvements that we make, that we would get credit for that, so to speak, that we were already doing things to improve the situation. That has been my understanding the whole time. Is that correct?
That is correct. Countywide, or in Loudoun County, the only requirements for reductions are through the MS4 permit, which the county operates one, the town of Leesburg operates one on their own. But yes, and I believe under certain circumstances, I've been told this by General Services, is that under certain circumstances, efforts that are done in the county, even if they're not within the MS4 permit area, can be applied as credits for their reductions.
All right, and I have heads bobbing up and down behind you. Excellent. Are there further questions, or Supervisor Higgins?
I was just going to comment. I mean, this effort has received pretty much unanimous support from every meeting or committee it's been before, and I would think that this area that's been chosen is probably the best area that you could if you're going to look in the west in the area that's had the biggest amount of impact. So, you know, I would hope we would move forward with this.
Okay. Well, if you'd like to make a motion.
I made the last motion. Is that motion number one is the one to make this rule?
Yes.
I move that the Transportation Land Use Committee recommend that the Board of Supervisors direct the Water Resources Technical Advisory Committee to finalize a scope of work for developing a watershed management plan for the Western Hills Watershed Management Area. And I further move that the Transportation Land Use Committee recommend that the Board of Supervisors considering that funding in the amount of $190,000 be considered as part of the fiscal year 2018 budget deliberations.
It's been moved and properly seconded. Do you have an opening, sir?
I will spare you.
Thank you. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Abstentions?
Yes.
Okay. That'll pass 3-0-1-1 with Supervisor Meyer absent for the vote and Chair Randall as an abstention. Thank you. Thank you, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Next item on our agenda is grading permit applications, limiting the application as a means to stockpile dirt or utilize excessive fill for projects. This is an action item. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Jim Brown. I'm the Environmental Program Manager under the Department of Building and Development, and formerly I was the Program Manager for Erosion and Sediment Control before I took the new position. So I'm fairly well steeped in the issue. And beside me is, of course, Mike Siegfried, Director of Building and Development, and Mark Stoltz, Zoning Administrator. Purpose of the discussion today is that staff was directed during a recent application process to look at possible actions that could discourage the use of grading permits, specifically standalone grading permits, as a means to stockpile and or accept excessive fill on a private property not otherwise necessary for a project. And these projects described in that first little intro are ones that are outside the realm of the land development application process. So they're, the standalone part is thus explained. Previously, in 2010, an interdepartmental policy that was devised through consultation with the zoning administrator at that time and the director of Department of Building and Development set a limit or a threshold, better described, at 50,000 cubic yards of material that could be, if you stayed under that, you know, you could proceed with a standalone grading permit. Other than that, it would have to have a zoning review. staff, we were tasked to look at that, and we did, and found that it would be, it became very difficult to continue with that process and not have what has happened in the past. And once more, the occasions of this are probably 1% of all of our land disturbance, but not have those occasions happen where the there would be a situation where excessive fill was being deposited and complaints arise. Based on that, if we look back in actually in the zoning ordinance, the 6-1000, which is an attachment to your item there, it already establishes that a zoning review is required prior to any land disturbance, so we're not creating anything new. What we're trying to do is to hook in all these outliers and have, we already do zoning reviews for single family homes and numerous other smaller projects that might be a standalone grading permit, but they get that review. With this, somebody comes in, staff identifies that the project requires a lot of fill, and that's an engineering look, I get that, and we're capable of doing that. We would then refer that to zoning, and then the combination of zoning and building and development would examine for appropriate use. And then if it was deemed appropriate, it would move forward. If it wasn't deemed appropriate, it would be denied with, of course, appeal process available to the applicant through the Board of Zoning Appeals. Anything to add, gentlemen? All right. What Perfect. We're asking is to move forward with that process.
Okay, excellent. Are there questions for staff? I see Supervisor Higgins and Chair Randall.
Just more of a comment. We met the other day and talked extensively about this, and I appreciate the work that you guys have done on this. I want to make something clear up front. This is not intended to hamstring or get in the way of commercial or industrial projects that have a process, and the process actually includes a review where we have projects either are ongoing or coming. So this is not intended to affect them at all. What this is intended to affect is those projects where someone gets a grading permit, and within the current policy, they can put, is it 50,000?
Up to 50,000.
Up to 50,000 cubic yards. That's a lot of dirt. Mm-hmm. And what this allows staff to do is a review of those grading permits that are not tied to an application of some sort, correct?
Yes.
To look at it and see if the dirt that they want to move is reasonable within the confined scope, whatever, of what they're trying to build. So that, I'll use a perfect bad example, I don't have to have a, I don't necessarily have to have my house 50 feet above the current well, that wouldn't be a good one. My driveway, 50 feet above the current lay of the land, topography, or whatever. So it's a review, and if the applicant is not satisfied with the review he gets from he or she gets from staff, they can go to BZA and ask for an appeal. So anyway, I think this is a good thing. Nothing is ever perfect, but I think this gives us an opportunity to take a look at those places where perhaps the ordinances such as they are have been abused or stretched or piled up on.
Thank you, Supervisor Higgins. Boop, boop. Madam Chair.
Mr. Brown, I have the feeling that you probably passed organic chemistry the first time out. This is a good item, and we, without speaking of any one person or one application became before us, we had an issue of some abuse, we think, earlier this year. And so this hopefully will take care of that, and this is a very good item. I do have one question. On page 2, we talk about the tremendous amount of construction that's happened in Loudoun over the past years. And you have a part in here that says, while the goal is generally to balance the site with fill or originating from the same site, sometimes there are situations where this balance cannot be achieved without a significant amount of infill being removed from or imported to the site. So my question is, when you have a significant amount of fill, especially being imported into a site, does it change any kind of environmental balance one way or the other within the county, or if fill is brought from without the county, which I expect that probably doesn't happen, does it have any type of consequences, negative or positive, but more especially negative on the environment?
Well, here's a good example, the Belmont Ridge Road interchange. I mean, there is a huge amount of fill that has to go into that. And in the land development application and planning process, the environmental considerations are taken, you know, and looked at before they get to an approval, so that in that case of the Belmont Ridge, there was a drainage that they had to, you know, establish box culvert to let it go under this fill. So in a controlled way, like that example, under a land development application, those things are being well considered. In an uncontrolled way, where you have this standalone grading permit thing, and they're just taking dirt to basically make money, because somebody will pay them to take it. Those considerations aren't always. I mean, we look at, you know, making sure they stay out of wetlands and you know, those kinds of things. So it's not a mass, you know, just fill everything. But the bigger picture things, like, well, how will the water runoff change if you're building something that, like a large driveway, you know, how's that going to change? How close is it, you know, to affecting neighbors if the runoff does change and go a different direction because of what you've done with the new land?
Yeah, in fact, we've had, even this year, I think we've had a very serious situation of a person doing that, and he didn't have the proper permits when he was doing it. So this is a very good item. I understood every word. It was very helpful, and I intend to support it, so thank you.
Yes, ma'am.
I guess for full public disclosure, I should inform the committee. I liked organic chemistry.
But did you pass it the first time?
Yes, I did.
Very good. I'm proud of you, girl.
Yeah, thank you.
I dropped that the first time.
Do we have any other questions? I believe this is a good idea as well. You know, as you said, without naming anything, I can look back, you know, to even some of our favorite folks, even in the Dulles South area, where we have some unusual, in reality, stockpiling that was probably occurring. You know, and you're dealing with things like if you're changing the topography extensively, the potential impact of, you know, neighboring properties, that type of thing. And believe it or not, we've had it even in HOAs where someone makes a change in their own backyard and then creates this horrible cascading effect to like six of the neighbors down the row, so to speak. You know, it's important even on a smaller level, but also on a larger level. With that, Supervisor Higgins, I assume you might want to make another motion.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am just full of motions today. However, before I get to the motion, I want to comment about organic chemistry. I was, in fact, smarter than both of you. I took a major that did not require organic chemistry in college because of previous experience with chemistry in high school. So, having said that, I move that the Transportation Land Use Committee recommend to the Board of Supervisors that the Director of Building and Development to forward all grading permit applications that propose to import of fill to a property and are not associated with an approved site plan or construction plans and profiles to the zoning administrator for a determination as to whether the amount of fill proposed to be imported is necessary and appropriate to meet the technical requirements for the proposed development activity or constitute stockpiling of dirt, period.
Second.
Okay, it's been moved and properly seconded. An opening, sir?
I did it.
Okay. Any discussion on the motion? Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? That motion carries 4-0-1 with Supervisor Meyer absent for the vote. At this time, I'm going to recess the meeting for the notice of the public as well as the applicant and everyone in the room. Supervisor Meyer will be calling into the meeting at 10 a.m. for the next item on our agenda, which is the One Loudoun Project. We do have a statement that I will read at the beginning when we reconvene at 10 a.m. And appreciate your patience while we ensure that we have Supervisor Meyer online for the next item. Thank you. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. I'd like to reconvene the December 16th Transportation Land Use Committee meeting. I will start by reading a statement. Pursuant to Code of Virginia Section 2.2-3708.1, the Board of Supervisors adopted rules of order and the policy of the Board of Supervisors. Supervisor Meyer has requested to participate in this meeting by electronic communication from a remote location that is not open to the public. Supervisor Meyer has stated that he cannot attend this meeting due to business travel located in New York City, New York. As required by law, a physical quorum of the Transportation and Land Use Committee is present in the Dulles Room, and the committee has made arrangements for the voice of Supervisor Meyer to be heard by all persons in the Dulles Room. Mr. Meyer made this request within the time frame required by policy, and the county attorney has determined that Mr. Meyer meets the qualifications to participate remotely. The committee will record in its minutes the specific nature of the personal matter and the location from which Mr. Meyer participated remotely. Supervisor Meyer, can you hear me?
I'm here, but I can't hear anyone.
Okay, you are here. You are here.
I'm here, but I can't hear anyone.
Supervisor Meyer, can you hear me now? Okay, while we're making a technical adjustment, if everyone will just be at ease.
Military, I know. That part I know. At ease means you just stand at attention one way versus another way, basically.
I again go to my comment. Air is human, but it takes a computer.
Hey, Suzanne, I can kind of hear you.
You can hear me now?
Yeah, I can hear you a little bit.
Okay, I'm trying again. Can you hear me now, Supervisor Meyer?
Yes, ma'am.
Perfect.
Thank you. I apologize.
Not at all. Our next item on our agenda is ZMAP 2015-0007, ZMAP 2015-0013, Minor Special Exception 2015-0008, ZMOD 2015-0011, 1 Loudoun. Staff, when you're ready, please.
Thank you. To provide the committee with an update for December, the applicant has submitted revised proffers. Staff received those last week. And in those proffers, the number of dwelling units has been reduced. They are proposing 600 multifamily units. So that will take the total number from 725 to 640. The applicant is also providing some additional affordable dwelling units and units to go towards the unmet housing needs. Also in the proffers, the applicant has added an additional option. So we have the full monetary contribution and the stadium option, which the committee discussed last month. And the proposal now is that the applicant will build a park and ride lot, which is valued at $3.29 million. It's in the county's budget. And then pay for the rest of the capital contributions as a monetary contribution. Staff did reach out to DTCI to seek their opinion on the park and ride lot option, and they are generally supportive of this. However, they did want to have assurances that the park and ride lot would be fully constructed and operational by fiscal year 2021. They also expressed concerns about the number of spaces. The applicant had indicated in the proffers that they wanted to build 500 spaces. DTCI prefers 200 to 300 spaces, and they also wanted to have some assurances that they will be a part of the design for the lot. And I do have representatives here from DTCI to speak more about that if the committee would choose to discuss that. Last month, the committee did talk about several of the ZCPA amendments, including the addition of 640 dwelling units, well, at that time it was 725, and also the removal of open space. Staff did want to seek some more clarification from the committee on their thoughts on the rest of the amendments to the ZCPA, so staff can, or we can answer any questions and talk about that further if the committee would like. Generally, staff's recommendation remains the same. We can support the addition of 640 dwelling units, the rezoning from the PDOP to the PDIP and R16, the R16 zoning modifications, and the proposal for the applicant to contribute the full capital facilities and or the park and ride lot. Staff cannot support the self-storage design, the other requested changes to the ZCPA and the zoning modifications and the Route 7 setback. And I did want to clarify in the staff report, a bulk of the information was not changed. We did update the first page to reflect that there will be 600 multifamily units. We didn't receive revised documents from the applicant until the day before the packets were to go out. So unfortunately, staff didn't have enough time to update the report. So that's why a lot of the numbers stayed the same, such as the setback from Route 7 that still remained at 245, and also the amount of multifamily dwelling units. And with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Thank you very much. Are there questions to the staff from committee members? Seeing none, I will.
Madam Chair, I have one if no one else does.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor Meyer. Go ahead.
So I did want to follow up with DTCI on the park and ride lot. My understanding, and the applicant can comment on this when they give their presentation, but I think that they would intend to build it relatively quickly. But my question goes to, is it common practice or is it allowed practice for us to allow for basically evening and nighttime and weekend use for our park and ride lots for, let's say, if the stadium comes or for other uses at One Loudoun? And how would an agreement like that be reached, or is that something that would be part of this proper package?
Madam Chair.
Please.
Supervisor Meyer, this is Joe Krobuth from DTCI. The answer to your question is yes. Those types of uses are typically permitted. If they are reoccurring or more regular in occurrence, we ask that that party typically enter into an agreement with the Department of General Services, who oversees leasing and those types of agreements for those uses.
Okay. Well, I'll hope that the applicant can comment some more on that about sort of an intent to talk with General Services on that to make sure that those details are nailed down. But you're saying that usually those agreements aren't of monetary in nature?
They can be, depending on the board's direction.
Yeah, well, I think that will be interesting to see, because obviously we're counting the full value towards their capital facilities credit of the lot for what is in the CIP, or at least a good portion of it. I think they wanted to get a $3.1 million credit. And so that agreement to use the lot, I think, would be something that the board will have a question about down the road, as far as, is that just a future agreement that will get negotiated independently with One Loudoun and General Services, or is that something where by them building it, they get the ability to use it down the road?
It would be a direct negotiation with General Services, and General Services would make the determination if board direction was necessary.
Great, thank you.
And if I can, on behalf of the applicant, we fully anticipate that negotiation with General Services and the county for use of that parking lot.
Okay, thank you. My question, follow-up question is, from my understanding, the applicant is proposing to build a park-and-ride lot with 500 spaces, and DTCI prefers park-and-ride lots that are 200 to 300 spaces. Is that correct?
There is a previous proffered site that is in county ownership that's been designated for a park-and-ride. It basically only has the capacity for about 200 spaces. Now, unless the applicant is proposing an alternative site that could accommodate 500, then we can have that discussion. But I'm not sure that the demand requires 500.
Okay. Applicant, please.
Yeah, we did a preliminary layout that showed 500 spaces, actually more than 500 spaces, showed 575 spaces on the county-owned site within One Loudoun. Now, whether or not the county wants that many spaces, happy to have that conversation. We thought we were going above and beyond and providing more parking, and maybe saving the county some money down the line. The CIP only, as Mr. Crowbeth points out, the CIP only anticipates a smaller parking lot, and we weren't asking for credit for the additional spaces over and above what your CIP would call for. We're asking for the 3.29 credit, even though we were more than doubling the size of that parking lot on the county property. If it's the county's will and the county's desire that parking lot be constructed to smaller standards, we'll do that. We just thought that it would give you all more flexibility to have a larger park and ride lot. And we have a preliminary layout, which we'd be happy to share to show how the 500 plus spaces would lay out there.
All right. For a point of clarification, the applicant is saying that in our CIP, the estimated cost is $3.29 million to, say, build a 300 space parking lot.
Mm-hmm.
But that the applicant is willing to build a parking lot up to 575 spaces, but only take the credit for the $3.29 million.
Right. And okay.
I want to make sure that Mr. Crowbeth and his staff are hearing this and understanding it. So the question becomes, is this or is this not a good idea? When we have an applicant who is willing to only take the credit of the $3.29 million, say, for a 300-space spot parking, lot, but they're willing to build up to 575 spaces.
That's perfectly fine with us, as long as they're not going, prorating it upwards above the number that we have.
Well, no, the applicant has just stated that they would only take the 3.29 million credit.
Yes.
So in reality, we would get additional parking spots above the 300 at no count against their capital facility proffer contributions.
That's fine.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure I had that clarification. Next item I'd like to chat about, I wanted to follow up regarding the 245-foot building setback from Route 7. I wanted to confirm with the applicant, is that number still correct and accurate?
The number, based on the outcome of last month's Transportation Land Use Committee meeting, our understanding of that was that it was 235-foot building setback. Which is a reduction, I should say it's an increase in the building setback of 55 feet in exchange for increasing the parking setback for the entire length of our Route 7 frontage by 50 feet so that there's no parking within 150 feet of Route 7. For 300 feet, you could put a building as close as 235 feet. For the entire length, you could not park closer than 150 feet. So, it's a 55-foot reduction increase for building. It's a 50-foot decrease in parking. So we tried to offset it that way. That was what we understood the direction of the committee to be last week or last month.
And that's my question, because staff put in they have four items that they're concerned about, and one is with the 245-foot building setback request. And I thought we'd had that discussion and said, okay, are we really going to quibble over 10 feet at this point in time? when literally at the Planning Commission it sounded like, you know, somebody was bidding at an auction. Can I get 235? Can I get 245? Can I get 255? Do I see 225? You know. So can staff clarify that?
As I mentioned, the applicant did submit revised documents to us, but they weren't submitted until the day before the packets went out. Staff unfortunately didn't have enough time to update that portion of the staff report, but we are aware of the new 235 setback and the 150.
Madam Chair.
Our recommendation stays the same. However, that is not something that we would support.
Understand.
We have been consistent in that policy citation for the committee's review. We are bringing the 300-foot setback discussion to you at a future TLUC meeting.
Yes, so which keeps getting delayed. But yeah.
Yes, ma'am. Thanks.
Okay.
Madam Chair, I have a comment.
Yes, Madam Chair.
About the setback. In my opinion, we weren't really talking about 245 to 235, which obviously is just 10. We were talking about 300 to 235. That's what we started at, which is 65. And so I think, depending on the direction you state the matter, it can look very different. And we were initially talking about 300, not initially talking about 245. So I just want to, I don't want to change history.
And if I may, the setback for this portion of One Loudoun is actually already modified to 290. So that's the only point that I would make. And I take your good clarification, but I didn't want to make it seem like I was not telling you correctly with a 55-foot reduction.
Supervisor Higgins?
Yeah, I'm getting a little mixed up in the setback business. I met with the applicant yesterday to talk about the application, and my understanding was the issue with the 245 and 235 was not the entire length of the property. It's just approximately 300 feet that accommodates whatever the part of the application that addresses some commercial space on the west end of the property. And for that 300 feet, is that is where the modification would be, correct?
Yeah. I've pulled up slides that should help explain, I think, what graphically demonstrate what you've just explained, Supervisor Higgins. The 290-foot setback exists currently in this location. And for that 300 linear foot run of the One Loudoun frontage to Route 7, we're asking to reduce that to 235 feet. 245 feet would drop it and clip the corner of this building, and that was the distinction between 235 and 245.
The rest of it remains the same. The change is to address the corner of that one building.
Mm-hmm. And the 290-foot setback as it exists today, as it's approved today, will continue to remain for the entirety of the frontage outside of this 300 linear foot section. So to the west of it and to the east of it, you can't be any closer than 290 feet from Route 7. But the parking reduction is increasing. Parking setback, I should say, is increasing from 100 feet for the entirety of the frontage to 150 feet. So we're pulling the parking further away from Route 7.
Right. That was my next comment, but you addressed it. The parking setback remains intact. In fact, you're adding to that.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
thank you.
Okay. Supervisor Meyer, any question on the discussion regarding the setback?
No question. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So that's at least been clarified that we're looking at in the current package a 235-foot setback for that one 300-foot linear section of the frontage. Okay. the question became the elimination / reduction of the civic use and public plaza requirements. I know from having been involved in the original application, you were creating a town center when we didn't really have a town center designation, so it was pieces of a puzzle. we had a discussion at our last meeting about the open space requirements. But if you look across the One Loudoun entirety of the project, they are still over the required amount of open space. Is that correct?
Yes, that is correct.
Okay. So is the reason staff is bringing this up is because they're literally looking at, say, a specific parcel, and then in that specific parcel, there's a concern?
The concern was brought up because I believe 4,500 feet of active children's area was being removed, but they did offer to place that elsewhere within the community.
Okay.
But staff is still concerned overall about the loss of open space.
Okay. But is that something that you all between TLUC and the Board of Supervisors meeting can work through and find the specific, say, location for the future or get something in writing? I asked for the applicant staff. Is that something you all can work on?
Yeah, absolutely. We can identify the location of it within the Central Park is where we're envisioning placing it. And if I may, the you mentioned the open space, and we just did an analysis of what the ordinance would require in terms of open space and what has been provided in each of these districts. And so you can see in each of these districts that that delta is quite significant, which is why we end up with as much open space as we do throughout the community. And all of that open space is open to everybody. It's not district specific, such that the folks in the PD, the R16 area can't enjoy the open space in the PDIP area or PDSA area. I mean, it's all open to everybody.
Okay. Mr. Schneider.
Madam Chair, I just want to create a distinction. There's ordinance requirements for open space, and then there's overall land use policy, and they tend to kind of overlap each other. The overall question we wanted to put to the committee was that a larger amount of open space was negotiated with previous applications at a lesser density. So we just want to make sure that the committee was comfortable with the reduction in open space, the increase in units, that you were comfortable with that scenario being proposed. And that's why we flagged it for your consideration.
Okay, excellent. Further questions for staff on this item? Supervisor Meyer, do you have any questions regarding the open space discussion?
No, ma'am. Thank you.
Okay. I'm trying to efficiently go through this to make sure that we hit all of the items that we need.
I do have a question about that.
Sure, please.
I want to understand. The open space requirement at 1040 exceeds the, I guess, percentage required. With the new homes that are being proposed, 640, I think, are we still within the confines of the open space or over it? What's required?
You're still over the policy requirement, but again, we're just saying this: the higher amount was negotiated with the previous density proposed.
Right, I understand that, but I just want to make sure they were still ahead.
Correct, both from an ordinance perspective and the policy perspective, they're still within the ranges that are anticipated.
But are they over the range?
Correct.
Okay, thank you.
Next question I have is regarding the non-office uses being visible along Atwater Drive. If someone can pull up a map so we can see that area, that would be helpful.
Let me see if I can. I'm going to ignore the text on the right, but this is the best overall image that we have of the entirety of the community. Atwater Drive is what runs from this intersection with Lexington Drive all the way paralleling Route 7 and then turning the corner around the stadium and going to the intersection with Thorndike and Loudoun County Parkway. And this entire area is what we're talking about in this location. And there's an exception already for the stadium. But the what that would require as we've gotten into final planning of this development is it inhibits us from putting a parking garage, for example, in between office buildings that are here as just an example, and it creates real engineering challenges because of that requirement that it's only office buildings that are able to be seen from Atwater Drive.
Staff, could you give a point of clarification of specifically what non-office uses that there's a concern about? You know, like, is there a list or, you know?
Well, I believe the initial concern was for the removal of the restriction of non-office uses and the removal of the PDC office land uses. Those two sort of work together, is that it takes away from the original office destination vision for One Loudoun. So that was what staff's concern was. I believe the restriction for non-office uses was in the previous proffers. Only office uses could be, could be visible from Atwater Drive. And with the removal of that language, that permits things like parking garages or any sort of use to be visible from Atwater Drive, which would create the visibility from Route 7.
So it's really not Atwater Drive. You're saying from Route 7.
Correct.
Is really, okay.
But the language in the proffers was Atwater Drive.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And if I may, when you think about the north side of Route 7 in this location, and you think about the two office buildings that have the beautiful DC Prime that's located overlooking that pond, and that's visible from Route 7, this proffer also inhibits the ability of us to put a signature restaurant, as an example, in the ground floor of that building, visible to Route 7. And those sorts of users and uses like some exterior visibility so that people know that they're there. And as this builds out, that flexibility we think is important to the continued growth of those non-residential uses along Route 7.
Okay.
Madam, I also wanted to add to it as well. So this plays into the larger discussion we flagged for the committee, which is re-envisioning the Route 7 corridor. When we saw Commonwealth moving away from keynote employment, that corporate campus visual corridor, Lexington 7 with those decisions, that's moving more to a retail-centric project. And then we're starting to see, along with One Loudoun, another project still on the corridor. So again, just flagging it, understanding that with each of these decisions, we're changing.
And I appreciate that. And if you look back at the Robert Charles Lesser report when we opted into Metro, there was that discussion that, you know, Class A office would move towards the Metro stations.
Exactly.
So if we don't have Class A office, say, in the Route 7 corridor anymore, we need to re-envision.
Exactly.
Or we can wait for the 28 years worth of supply that's already sitting out there to hopefully fill up in, you know, vacant office parks.
Exactly. So then it becomes a question of what that looks like. And so, for instance, this ties into the stadium, removing the stadium commitments to design, just to make sure that the board is comfortable with what the visual impact of that change would mean to the corridor. So, thanks.
Understand. Thank you. Supervisor Olmsted.
Sorry, Ron. I'll make this really quick.
Oh, no, that's right.
Okay.
I'm doing a round robin with you, sir.
Colleen, so right now our regulations would prohibit your first floor restaurant being visible from 7, even if what was above it was office. Okay. I mean, I could see a rationale for allowing restaurant as long as what was above it was office. Do you foresee restaurants wanting to be on, say, the roof of an office building?
Those buildings, what's important to note is that there is a proffer which remains that all of those buildings that face Route 7 are a minimum of 4 stories. So it's going to be a multi-story building, and it helps with the diversification of this environment, which we're this section that's up now next to this mouse that's up next to Route 7, we're calling Uptown. It helps with our ability to attract innovative users and innovative commercial tenants, such that if somebody wanted to do a rooftop restaurant, that they could go ahead and they could do that in that location. And so it's our ability to continue to provide proximate parking to these buildings, to be able to provide restaurants and vertical to those. And honestly, if it ended up being a retail user, that they could be in that location. What we think gives the assurance of a high quality corridor is the visual cues of those buildings being at least four stories tall. That these are by Loudoun standards sizable buildings. That they're not low rise one story flex industrial one story office buildings. That they are visual. We're just trying to maintain that flexibility so that we can continue to grow the downtown to the uptown.
Could you foresee the possibility of limiting yourself to restaurant and office within sight of Route 7? Personally, I wouldn't want to see a strip mall there.
Mm-hmm.
But I could see an argument for a little more flexibility on restaurant uses in an office building.
We certainly don't want it to be a strip mall either. And I think that the four-story minimum requirement gets us away from it being a strip mall. The second thing that I'll point out is that when you think about, as an example, the Reston Town Center, at the eastern end of the Reston Town Center, adjacent to Market Street, you've got the Hyatt Regency on one side with a ground floor restaurant. And then on the other side of Market Street, you've got an Ann Taylor. There used to be a Ruby Tuesday. And you've got the office buildings above it. We just want the flexibility to be able to do that. And as the proffer's drafted right now, we don't have that. The other thing is that we don't have the opportunity to put the parking garage and the parking facilities facing Route 7. We do have design commitments to ensure that those parking structures are architecturally treated, that there's green screening, that those sorts of things already. But without that flexibility, those parking structures end up inside the development, inhibiting perhaps pedestrian connectivity. Without that flexibility, you end up with those restaurants being located inside that development. And you know, taking a page from, for example, development in your hometown, it's hard that you've phenomenal restaurants in the Village at Leesburg, and I know them because I've driven in there, and I go, I really like that restaurant, but they don't have the great visibility. And I think that if you ask them, they would like that visibility from Route 7. We're just trying to continue to build that better mousetrap.
Thank you.
Yep. Supervisor Meyer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. So my question is mostly for staff on this issue with trying to preserve Route 7 as a commercial corridor. I guess my question is, I feel like we haven't heard much of this talk, and Supervisor Volpe brought this up in the context of our CPAM process of trying to make sure that we have places for commercial office buildings. And it almost seems like a reverse philosophy for 7 versus what we're looking at with the CPAM. So I'm just trying to understand philosophically where we're coming from on this.
Supervisor Meyer, is your question where we're coming down or where the comp plan envisions to address this? Is that your question?
Well, yeah. I mean, it's. I understand where you're coming at from, where the comp plan is coming at mm-hmm. this from. But I guess my question is, when we're talking about trying to preserve places for office buildings, especially Class A office, it seems like Supervisor Wolfe, if you're right, that our target is going to be the metro area. And so I guess I'm just trying to understand, was it just a decision point that staff is trying to bring up to us, or is it a concern with the compatibility with the comp plan, or is it just a general concern of staff?
It's the first point that you made is understanding the context. There's so many moving parts to this application, and we've been focused on some fairly significant issues. These lesser topics that not have gotten as much attention, we just want to make sure we're clear on your comfort level with it. And then just making sure in the context of what else is happening, recognizing that the dynamics of the corridor are changing, that we're just all on the same page with what these decisions collectively mean. And it sounds like the committee's comfortable with that. So
I totally appreciate that. I was just trying to get the full context.
Yep.
Thank you.
And we do fully expect, as part of Envision Loud, and we'll be revisiting the whole corridor discussion.
Okay, excellent. I believe there's only, I think, one other item that staff kind of had on its list, and I think that was the design of the self-storage facility. Does anybody have a current, you know, design they want to put up on the board so that we can see what we're looking at? Okay, thank you. Staff, if you want to walk through what the concerns are.
Well, I think there's two. One was the design of the stadium, the design guidelines being removed from the stadium. But I'll let Jackie go through the questions regarding the self-storage.
We did receive updated elevations from the applicant. They did commit to specific materials. They also indicated that they added some more masonry. Staff's concerns remained the same, however, that we would envision a higher quality design for this highly visible area.
Okay. Supervisor Olmstead.
Thank you. I mean, I don't view that as unattractive, although it doesn't give me a warm, cozy feeling either. What are you envisioning that would be more attractive? Do you have any examples, visual examples, of what you think ideally it could look like?
We provided the applicant a lot of other examples of many storages that have been built throughout the county that have higher quality building materials, and one of the things that I guess they keep alluding to is this kind of moving toward their rec center. And, you know, a rec center versus a 4 to 5 story mini storage with seam metal is kind of a different concept. And so from our perspective, we feel like that this is something that's more in tune in more of an industrial setting. And so from our perspective, you know, the commitment with One Loudoun in their design standards for their non-residential buildings do not have this type of material as part of their commitments. And so we're just trying to uphold them to what they had there.
Is it then, Ricky, mostly just the materials that staff is concerned about, or is it the edgier, more urban design?
No. They've made significant progress on the original building to break up the massing and create a visual interest. And so from that standpoint, it is primarily the more material issue here.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Madam Chair?
I'm a pretty big stickler about design of these buildings, and as proven the other night by our board meeting. These pictures really don't, I think, give due credit to what, to the pictures you showed me. There we go. If the storage will look like this and using those same materials, and that is what I'm hearing, I actually think that for me that passes my muster, and I got a pretty high standard for how these things look. So if the commitment is, or the conditions of approval are, that you're going to use the same materials that you used in this community building, then I think that actually, I think that would pass. Now, if I'm incorrect and you're planning on using different materials, no matter the design, please tell me. But if those are the materials you're going to use, then I think that would be sufficient. And I am really very aware that One Loudoun it's a very nice development, and you've put a lot of time into your townhomes and just the look of the whole area. And I have spoke more than once about, you know, needing to be consistent with that, and to some degree you all being kind of a victim of your own success. But I truthfully think if you're committing that these would be the materials that you use for the storage facility, then that would meet my standard. That would be enough for me. I would be in support of it.
And to answer your question, we, as you recall, last month's TLUC committee meeting, we brought the actual materials, which demonstrated all of the environmental help of the insulation. And we've also provided now the names of those materials, not just, hey, it's going to look generally like this. We are The materials we showed you are the same materials that were used on that, and we've provided commitments to those with some flexibility in case Kingspan no longer sells them and we've got to use a different manufacturer. But we've gotten down to the manufacturer of those materials to give the assurance that it's going to that design inspiration isn't just something that we forget the day after approval.
Thank you. Supervisor Meyer, any questions on the architectural design of the mini storage facility?
No, this is something that our office has been working on with the applicant for quite some time, and with Mr. Barker's advice. I mean, where this started and where this ended are just night and day as far as improvement with both added masonry, design elements, and getting down to the specific material. And so I'm more and more confident. I think Chair Randall's comments are right on with making sure we have a high design standard. But I also add this as far as generally, I mean, we saw yesterday reported in the newspapers that the new townhouses off of Central Park and the town center are going to be starting in the 800,000 range. And so my view is that that One Loud is going to shoot themselves in the foot by making one of their entrances a eyesore as well. So I'm exceedingly confident that these design standards will fit with the community and will be of higher standards than many of the other buildings along Route 7 right now.
Okay. I think we've covered that. I think the biggest question that I have that hasn't been addressed yet, and I'll say it from the beginning, the whole idea of that the concept of the stadium and the agreement and the cooperative use agreement and all of that was not comfortable to me. Is that still in your proffers? Is that still part of this package?
With regard to as it was last month, there's an option one and an option two. Option one remaining exactly as it was discussed last month, and I understand your discomfort with option one. And then we've provided an option two, which would construct the park and ride facility. And we would, as we discussed earlier, we would receive capital facilities credit for that construction. That park and ride lot, this slide is not accurate. I will say the bottom right, it says applicant proffers to file site plan within 6 months of zoning approval. Our proffers actually provide that we will file for site plan approval within 60 days of zoning approval, within 60 days. So we will, there's a 30-day appeal process. We're going to get through that. And then within 30 days after there's been no appeal and it's been approved, knock on wood, we will file for site plan approval. And then within 120 days of the site plan being approved, we're going to commence construction. Of the park and ride lot. And so we've talked a little bit about the 200 spaces versus 500 spaces. What you can see here is that this provides for a total of 575 parking spaces in the configuration that's demonstrated here. If it's the county's will that it becomes smaller, we're happy to set a smaller minimum, but this we have committed to a minimum of 500 parking spaces in this location. I think one of the things that I've recognized just in the last week, as I left Sterling last night at 5:30 and had to drive west on Route 7, that the opening of Russell Branch Parkway has been amazingly helpful to the traffic on Route 7. So the location of this park and ride facility adjacent to Russell Branch Parkway and allowing folks to get over to Loudoun County Parkway from all the parts to the west, be it Leesburg, Lansdowne, Belmont Country Club, Ashburn Village, Ashburn Farm, and then make a decision as to whether they're going to go south on Loudoun County Parkway, whether they're going to continue on, go down 28. I really think that this is just Colleen's opinion, is an ideal location for this park and ride facility in here. And again, we're happy to build the 500 spaces, but only receive capital facility credit for the amount that the county had budgeted.
Okay, thank you. Staff, did you hear? I'm assuming our DTCI staff prefers option two.
We do. We prefer to maximize spaces. This, quite honestly, is the first time that we've had an opportunity to see the layout. I mean, I can quickly see some issues that we have concerns about. Number one, there are no bus bays from which to park the buses. There are no shelter locations. There are certain amenities. So
I'm going to ask the question. Between now and when it goes to the full board, can you all make the time to work with the applicant to address, you know, I call it the kiss and ride, the bus drop off, all of those technical issues, physical movement through the parking area, all that kind of stuff?
Absolutely. We will make the time.
Likewise. Okay. Supervisor Meyer, any question on this? Option two?
No, I like it. And I would associate myself with the comments that Ms. Gillis made as far as the projected use of it. It is very convenient for a lot of commuters, both from the northern part of my district as well as a good chunk of Supervisor Bona's district, close to where Chair Randall lives as well. And this is much more convenient than the Telos lot because you have to go up Ashburn Road quite a bit and park in there. This will be, I think, very well used. To be honest with you, looking at it, it's probably going to be the one that I use when I go into the city. And so I believe that there'll be a good amount of use for it, especially as the corridor continues to get busier. So I think that it's a very, very good concept.
Okay. Just before we get into any kind of motions, I just want to make sure. Option one would be the kind of stadium kind of item versus option two would be the park and ride facility. If I can just ask my colleagues, which would they prefer, option one or option two? Supervisor Umstead?
I mean, I think the park and ride facility is a good idea.
Okay, excellent. Madam Chair?
Are you asking maybe why I want a stadium versus the parking ride?
The I can do this cooperative use agreement thing.
That's what
whatever
sounded, I know that. That's what it sounded like. That's what I was like.
No.
We're still gonna keep. We're working on the.
No,
stadium.
I know that. But the way the question was stated, I was like, that's not what you're actually asking. Okay, so I would say option two, but I also think that Mr. Kroboff just said that he saw some issues that he'd like to talk to Ms. Gillis about and work with the applicant with. And so obviously option two on its face, but I also wouldn't commit to any to either until the staff did their due diligence with the applicant.
Okay, I appreciate it. So your option two.
Well, wait, no. I didn't say it was
Madam Chair,
two. I didn't say that, ma'am.
I have the fullest and utmost of confidence because I've seen them work through this before to take care of the kind of the couple of technical issues of, you know, where the little bus bays are and where the, covered bus stop location is going to be and this, that, and the other thing in the project, okay? They've got basically a month to do it, so.
Madam Chair, if I may,
yeah.
I'm not saying I don't have confidence. I'm saying that I need my words not to be restated. I said option two, providing, and I have to see the providing before I would say either one.
Right. We'll have the full providing before it goes to the full board, which is nice. Supervisor Higgins.
I'm okay with the option two, as it gets worked out. I do have a question on the number of units in here, and I want to make sure I got it straight and sort of on the record. When this development was originally proposed, it was proposed for 2,450 units. That's correct?
Yes, sir.
Yes.
And it was approved for 1,040 units.
That's correct.
Now, the original ask in this application was for 725 additional units.
Yes.
Of which all but 40 of those would be multifamily units.
Mm-hmm.
Current ask is for 640 units, of which 600 of those are multifamily units.
Yes.
Correct.
And so I understand this right. The staff is comfortable with this ask on the residential or the additional units in there?
Yes.
Okay, at the 725, and I would assume at the 640 as well.
Yes.
Okay, that's what I want to know. Thank you.
Okay, excellent. Supervisor Meyer, I hope you don't mind. I wanted to do that so that we would kind of know, because this is in your district and you'd be the one making the motion, but that was kind of the big question that was out there, you know, kind of the stadium use agreement versus the park and ride lot. I wanted to know, is
it? Yeah, I mean, I had understood that the applicant had driven to, had sort of made a decision to try to focus on the option two versus the stadium use agreement. And so with that in mind, I'm definitely willing to look at option two, but not because that's the direction that I'd like to see.
Understand. Are there any other questions for staff or the applicant? I mean, is there anything that we missed, staff, that you wanted to bring up?
The only thing that I would like to add before we get into motions, the committee should speak to which option proffer that should be included in the motion.
Correct. That's why I asked option one or option
okay.
two.
The critical action date will need to be extended.
Yes.
And if we are thinking about future business meetings, if we were to talk about the January 19th meeting, that means that staff and the applicant would need to work out all the issues before the new year, because the packets will go out the first week in January.
Statutorily, our packets come out 5 days before the meeting. So if the meeting's on January 19th, that means the packet comes out on January 14th. And before you pop in, Mr. Barker, yes, I know you need final documents in time for the county attorney to review that. So you minus 7 days from that. So you'd need to have a clean package by January 7th. Okay.
Staff would like time to
understand.
Evaluate everything.
Well, because from January 7th to the 14th, for example, like Ron Brown, if he needed wording changed in a section of the proffer, that type of thing, you have the time to go back and forth that week before the packet goes out. Yeah.
Correct.
And so. Ms. Gillis is conferring with her folks back there to see, hopefully not everyone is, you know, on a Caribbean cruise for the next 3 weeks.
Yeah, they're behind me and they can stab me in the back. That's why I check with them first. somebody's got to, like, let me know if I'm throwing them under the bus. I just talked to them, and we can have everything to staff either end of day January 3rd or by noon on January 4th.
Bravo.
Yeah, so we will, and to the extent that it would help staff, we will roll things out sooner rather than later. It seems to me that the proffers are largely complete, and so we can probably send them to Ron Brown in the next day or two and turn that over quickly so that he can commence his review, and then we'll give us a little bit of time to work on the details of the park and ride lot and a layout and work with Mr. Crowbeth and his department. But I think that we are pretty much there pending whatever motions come out of this committee to make us change anything.
Excellent. Okay. With that, Supervisor Meyer, would you like to offer a motion?
I hope so. I might need some advice on the language for which option and how to include that in the motion. But I'll try to go on the fly, and then if staff needs to correct me on anything at the end, please let me know. I move that the Transportation and Land Use Committee recommend that the Board of Supervisors for ZMAP 2015-0007, ZCPA 2015-0013, ZPMI 2015-0008, ZMOD 2015-0011, One Loudon, to the Board of Supervisors for action. And then did we decide, I was trying to overhear, it was a little bit choppy, on which
okay.
meeting we wanted to send it to?
Supervisor Myers, there are going to be a couple friendly amendments. Let me just keep it clean right there for a second, and can I get a second? Thank you. It's been moved and properly seconded to forward all of these ECPAs, SPMI, ZMODs for One Loudon to the full Board of Supervisors for action. Supervisor Myers, may I ask for a couple of friendly amendments?
Yes, ma'am.
Okay. One would be for it to go to the January 19th, 2017 Board of Supervisors business meeting.
One I would accept that.
Okay. One would be that we are selecting, recommending option two, the park and ride facility.
I'd also accept that.
Okay. and confirming the other items that we discussed, that it would be the that no matter what size the park and ride is built, that the applicant would only get credit for $3.29 million in the capital facility portion of their proffers, as that is what is currently in our county CIP.
Yes, I would accept that. But I guess my question is in their specific proffer, they're saying that they're going to build 500 spaces, is that correct?
That is correct. So what I'm trying to do is ensure that even if they build the 500 spaces, it's basically we would get extra spaces for free.
Right.
Okay. And is the seconder okay with those friendly amendments? Okay. Yes. And the other friendly amendment, so that we're clear, is that we're recommending approval.
Well, I would accept it if we have the three votes. But I guess that'll probably be something that'll be clear in discussion. So I'll accept it for now.
Madam Chair, I'd like to divide the motion.
Divide the motion?
Mm-hmm.
Well, hang on the friendly amendment. Can we do the recommending for approval?
I cannot vote for approval for all four.
Okay.
I'll take my
last one out. My last potential friendly amendment. What we're trying to do is move this to the full Board of Supervisors for action.
Yeah, I'm comfortable with that.
So are we okay with that?
Yes.
Okay. Now, Madam Chair, you said you wanted to divide the motion. What piece of the motion?
Well, we have, and if I'm mistaken, please somebody correct me, but we're talking about three different things. We're talking about to rezone PDOP, Planned Development Office Park, to residential. We're talking about to rezone PDOP, PDOP to PDIP, and we're talking about the to amend the concept plan development to add additional 600 multi-family units. Is that correct?
Okay.
Are we talking about all three?
I'm going to actually have to ask a technical question. I've never seen a land use case motion, call for division before.
If this was filed as part of one application, then we need to act on that application in whole. We can't one part of it as opposed to the other.
Okay, that's fine.
But that would be up. I don't know the answer to that from the applicant, whether this is one application or multiple applications.
It was all filed at the same time. But
the zoning action is one whole application. The rezoning is one application. The ZCPA is one whole application. There's a separate SPMI for the self-storage facility. There are separate ZMODs that could be acted on separately. And I don't know that there's, I'm maybe forgetting one.
The proffers mingle. The conditions of approval are intermingled, so it'd
correct.
Be difficult to pull them apart and act on them separately.
Okay. That's fine.
That's what I thought.
Well, Madam Chair?
Yes.
The reason why I felt more comfortable not having the recommendation for approval is exactly for this reason, because I understand that different supervisors right now are okay with certain parts and not okay with certain parts, and I think the goal is to try to make sure that we get that ironed out before the full board meeting, but we do need to move this item on, as it's been, I think, in three separate TLEC meetings now at least, and so that's the intent.
Okay, thank you, Supervisor Meyer, and of course, I also realize maybe for level of comfort, for example, with the park and ride facility discussions, you know, having time to have that worked out. Is there further discussion on the motion on the floor? All right, seeing none. Oh, wait, Madam Chair.
I actually, I want to say to the applicant that you all have been very helpful throughout this whole process. And I really have appreciated that I have talked a lot about trying to do new and inventive and new thinking, outside the box thinking, and you all have done that. You tried first with the sports facility, that didn't work, and now we're talking about other things. But, you know, I cannot support this many homes, and we've talked about that in advance, and I wouldn't tell you one thing in private and vote another way in public. So you know I can't support this application, because I live here and I know how the traffic looks, and I know that eventually all this traffic from all these different parts of Loudoun County all ends up at the same place, which is Route 28 and 7, and I know that all the traffic improvements in the area of One Loudoun are great, but eventually all roads lead to Route 28 and 7, and we just stop and have a bottleneck. I know, because I traveled the other day to Prince William County, and you get by that Wegmans at Route 28 and 7, and it just stops. And so I do not believe that more houses can be accommodated with the infrastructure at this time. Having said that, you all have been amenable. You've met with every supervisor as much as possible. You've been honest. You've been upfront. I really do mean it when you say you've made me work harder and made me understand land use more. And although I can't support it, because I just do not believe our infrastructure can take this many more homes, I don't want that to be a reflection on how well you all have worked with all of us and worked with the county. So thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Supervisor Meyer, any closing?
No, I don't have any closing at this time.
Okay. All those in favor of forwarding the One Loudoun application to the full Board of Supervisors on the 19th of January, and I'm assuming applicant is okay with the timeline extension?
Yes, we will send a timeline extension ASAP.
Perfect. Okay, so all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
Nay.
Okay, that motion will carry 4-1 with Chair Randall in opposition. Ladies and gentlemen, seeing that there are no further items on our agenda, this meeting is adjourned. Signee die.